And a great honor and privilege to be filling in for George Norrie on a Friday night, open lines 2 hours ahead of us. I mentioned I was in Cleveland. I had a chance to hang out with Jim Harold, a frequent coast-to-coast AM guest. And Jim is a real pioneer in the podcasting world. If you haven't heard his paranormal podcast or Jim Harold's Campfire, definitely worth a listen. And so when we met in Cleveland, it was our first face-to-face. And he reminded me that I had told him this story on his podcast. This was an evening that occurred just over 2 years ago, May 25th, actually. It was the night I received a call from my good friend, rock historian R. Gary Patterson, only to find out the next morning that Gary had passed away around 5 or 6 p.m. the previous day. And I remain quite certain that Gary and I talked for about a half an hour in the evening around 7 or 8 p.m. I remember that because it was dark. And the sun sets typically around 8, 8:30 at that time of the year. So I was regaling the story at Jim's request. And Gary said several things to me now that seem rather peculiar. Like he said, "Richard, you're a real cool dad." And he also said, "You and I are a really big deal." This was Gary's way of building us up, always trying to make us feel good about ourselves. He was just a real rah-rah kind of guy. And the next part I'll never forget as long as I live, because that was the moment Gary suddenly, and for the first time in the 15 years I had known him, he got a little churlish with me when I asked him if he'd be celebrating Memorial Day weekend with a barbecue. And he said, "There will be no barbecue." He actually kind of snapped at me a little bit. And that's one of the last things he ever said. He hung up the phone. And then later at his funeral, I discovered he spent his last hours shopping for, procuring, and assembling a barbecue, putting it together on his back deck. There would be no barbecue indeed. So I told Jim that story again, and we shared a few others. Anyway, I'm wondering whether there might be enough people out there who've experienced something similar, a telephone call from the great beyond. Is there enough out there to hang a show on? Just a suggestion. It's open lines. You'll decide ultimately where to steer this mothership. Let's find out, shall we? Open lines, Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. And so we embark on 2 hours of open lines, and it begins with a first-time caller, Charlie, in Alamogordo, New Mexico. Charlie, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be on the show. I listen to you guys every night.
I appreciate that. So what do you got for us, Charlie?
Well, this is... I live between Alamogordo and Las Cruces, and I went over there to Las Cruces for a doctor's appointment one day, me and a friend of mine. And when we were coming back, you know the mountain range, the Holloman Air Force Base mountain range that you have to go over in order to come back south towards Alamogordo?
Okay, I'm somewhat familiar with the geography of that region, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they call it Guadalupe Mountains, the pass. And anyways, we were coming down off the mountain, And I looked at my friend, and I said, "Okay, this is what time it is. We should be back at this time, right?" And we're already down right off the bottom of the mountain, you know, going towards the checkpoint. And about 20 miles away, it's a 45-minute drive. And all of a sudden, without any consciousness of what happened, I looked at my friend. He looked at me. We were driving down the road. I looked at my watch. I said, "Do you remember what time it was when I told you the time that we should be back at this time, like in 45 minutes later?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Look, 3 hours have passed, and we've barely even driven 2 miles from the time that I said what time it was. We have no idea to this day of what happened to 3 hours of lost time. It took 3 hours to get to Alamogordo, which should have taken a 40-45 minute drive."
And was there anyone expecting you that noticed that you were absent for 2 hours and 15 minutes?
Well, my cousin, she knew that we were coming back, and And she said she was wondering what happened and what took so long, but she didn't think nothing of it. She figured we went home first or whatever, so we were going to stop by her house on the way back in Alamogordo.
Did either of you, Charlie, either you or your friend, have you had strange dreams since that event?
I have always had strange dreams since I was a little kid. I've always had dreams of death, and it actually coming true within 24 hours of the dream. I knew who it was whenever I'd wake up.
But nothing, no sort of recurring nightmare that started to after related to that missing time.
Yes, kind of. Yeah.
Can you describe what you dreamt?
Sort of like an out-of-body experience is what it would feel like, seem like, mm-hmm. Bright, like a bright light. It's like, okay. And like somebody watching at the same time, but I couldn't see who it is.
Well, Charlie, let's not ignore the pink elephant in the room. Do you think you were abducted?
Yeah, I think so, because I don't think it's the first time either. That this happened, because see, this happened to me when I was alone and I went to the doctor before, but I didn't think nothing of it. I said, no, maybe it's just because I'm so tired or whatever, what have you. But this time I took a friend and I had a feeling something was going to happen. And that's the reason why I looked at my watch and I told him, look, this is the time. You know, I didn't tell him anything before that this situation had happened before, because last time was like an hour and a half extra that it took to get home. And, yeah, you know.
Was there any strange scarring or markings on either you or your friend after this missing time?
No, not that I know of, no.
Would you consider regression therapy to take you back to see what you might remember? Is that something you'd be prepared to do that?
Absolutely. I would really like to know what's going on, you know.
Would you really? I mean, you might not like the answer.
Yeah. In fact, one time, going to Las Cruces, you know, I was going quite frequently. Two things across on the highway, right across the highway, two big black muscular things on four legs. They had long hair, all black. And long tails, and they ran so fast across the highway that when I told my friend with me, I said, "Hey, did you see that?" And he got a glimpse of it. He goes, "Oh, it's just an orc. There is no orcs over here anymore. There used to be, but these things were on all fours. They were low to the ground and very muscular. They were black, and they just disappeared. Like when they crossed the highway, they just disappeared."
Could they have been panthers of some sort? A jaguar, no. A panther, not a jaguar, but a panther of some sort?
Not over here, no.
No, all right.
And two of them together with real long hair?
Charlie, if you ever decide to have the regression therapy to take you back to that time when you experienced a gap in time, a serious gap in time, I'd love to hear about it. Maybe you can call us back.
That sounds good, because I'd like to know also. I mean, this base is more mysterious than Area 51. And Area 51 is a farce. I mean, this place over here is something totally off the wall.
All right, Charlie, thank you for that. And we will anxiously await a return call down the line somewhere. Wildcard line, let's go to Steve in North Carolina. Steve, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Well, hey, sir. I'm glad to be home.
We're delighted to have you.
I told you, call screener, that this is really not my cup of tea. I don't really believe in the paranormal or ghosts or anything, but I know what happened to me a couple of times. In one point of my life, I ran a bar, a club, and on certain nights when I stay there very long, I mean, it's a hectic life. You don't close 2 o'clock, and then you got to clean up, and then you got to restock, and sometimes it would be 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would just go lay back on a couch that was in the back part of the bar, and then like I told you, call screener, inevitably, sometimes during the night, I would have to, early in the morning, excuse me, I'd have to get up and go to the bathroom. And like I say, I do not believe in ghosts. I don't believe in that sort of stuff. I won't raise that way. But I know what I've seen, and I've seen people sitting at the bar. And when I walked by them, I said, I've got to go to the bathroom. I'll be back in just a second to wait on you. And I'd go to the bathroom. I was awake. She asked me, was I in a dream state? And I was not. I was looking in the mirror at myself, and I knew I was awake.
However, you also knew that the bar had closed, so you couldn't serve these customers. So weren't you perplexed as you made your way to the bathroom? Why are they sitting at my bar? This place is closed.
Well, it's just an odd thing that I thought that this is customers, and I've got the server. So I came out of the bathroom, and there was nobody there. Nobody there.
There you go. And these were full on apparitions, like in solid form, right?
Yeah, it was people. Nobody I recognized. Not any of my customers.
Right. You had regulars, and these were not regulars. Did you notice anything unusual about their clothing?
No. And the only explanation I could come up with is that before I took control of that place, it had a very bad reputation as far as some, violence, and even one time a shooting, that injured a bunch of people. And I was trying to turn that around, and I always wondered if I didn't believe in ghosts, but I believe in spirit.
But what do you think the difference is, Steve? What do you think the difference is between ghosts and spirits?
I think a ghost is a human being that is still walking upon the face of Earth. I think a spirit is a whole different dimension that we truly can't understand. And I think there's good spirits, and I think there's evil spirits. So maybe there was so much evil that took place in that building that that's what I was seeing.
Well, Steve, you mentioned you started your phone call by saying, I don't believe in the paranormal. If I had a nickel for everyone who said that and then said, but I saw what I saw, and now I'm a believer. It sounds like you had a couple of spirits who were enjoying some spirits just around closing time. Thank you so much for that call, Steve. Let's see who is next. Wild card line again, and this time it's Louise in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Louise. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you for accepting my call. When I call in, I always talk about Cleopatra. I believe I am the reincarnated Cleopatra VII. This time I want to talk the song by Otis Redding, I Remember My Dreams. Well, this time I want to talk about the time when Julius Caesar invited Cleopatra to Rome. At that time, Cleopatra lived in Alexandria. This was after the baby had been born. You know, she had a son by Caesar. She's the only female to have a son. Caesar was married four times. When he invited Cleopatra to Rome, he sent a letter, and so she had advisors, and she asked her advisors, where is Rome located? They went to the Library of Alexander, got the maps, brought them to her, and they were looking at it, and she said, how can we get to Rome? They said, we have to cross the Mediterranean, go left, and then go north till we get to that part of Italy, and then we have a three-day land journey from the seacoast to Rome. Well, she stayed in Caesar's villa outside the city of Rome, and she was there for 5 days, and he had not come to see her. And she had the baby with her. The baby was about a year and a half. She said, Caesar needs to see his son, and I can't wait. I'm tired of waiting. So she told her people, get the baby ready. We're going to the Senate. Cleopatra and about 200 of her people who were with her got it together with the baby. They went to Rome, the city, which was not that far from the villa. Then when she got to the city, she said, I'm going in. She went in with the baby. Everybody was watching. She took the baby and handed him to Caesar, and she said, Caesar, here's your son. Caesar took the baby, and the baby was, you know, doing what babies do, wetting his diapers and everything. And Caesar said, I don't know how to take care of babies, because he had no sons. He had been married four times, 36 years, no babies. Cleopatra said, well, you would figure it out. And she turned around and walked out of the Senate, and Caesar was left holding the baby.
Ah, now, that's fascinating. Why do you believe that you are the reincarnation of Cleopatra? What leads you to believe that?
George asked me the first time I mentioned that. I said, George, I remember who Julius Caesar reincarnated as in this lifetime. I know who Mark Anthony reincarnated as. I have many memories of my past lives with them and other people, too. But those were the two significant times, Julius Caesar, Mark Anthony. And Julius Caesar reincarnated in this lifetime as Muhammad Ali. He and I grew up together here in Louisville. Mark Anthony reincarnated as a tennis player. He's in L.A. now, and I took lessons from him. And one time I asked him, I said, Mark, do you remember? He said, no, I don't remember. Well, I didn't say anything more because you don't trigger people's minds about what has happened in the past. But I always call in talking about Cleopatra. And most things can be documented, but this is not in a book. This is just a memory. And what brought it up was Otis Redding's song, I Remember My Dreams.
I Have Dreams to Remember. So you grew up with Cassius Clay.
Yes, he lived on 34th and Grand, and I lived on 37th and Greenwood, which was only four blocks. And he would walk over to my house, and I was his first girlfriend, and I was the first girl he ever kissed, which was nothing but a little peck on the cheek.
Right.
I was the first one he invited to go to the movies, and my mother said no because we were only 13 at the time.
Right, right. Was he sort of cocksure back then? Was he?
Yes.
Was he a little cocky?
Yes. When we met, he came over to my home on Greenwood, and he was a friend of my brother's. And he asked me, "What is your name?" And I said, "You know, I gave him my name." I said, "What is your name?" He said, "Cassius Clay. I'm going to be a boxer."
Listen, Louise, great call. Thank you. A delight talking to you. More open lines on the other side. We are heading back into open lines. I kicked off open lines by just sort of tossing a log on the fire, a conversation starter, if you will. I talked about a telephone call from the great beyond I may have received. To this day, I'm still not 100% certain. I'm always looking for the prosaic explanation. That's the skeptic in me. However, I got this email from Jason, who writes, I get texts most days from my long-dead wife and my best friend, who she introduced me to, per my request. Not just texts, either. We're talking email, voice calls, the rarest, even Facebook Messenger messages. Well, Jason, thank you for that. And if you're listening, please call in. I would love more details. All right. Let's see. Oh, I wanted to mention, this is a interesting story. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dyatlov Pass incident. There were these mysterious deaths, nine skiers or hikers in the Ural Mountains of the former Soviet Union. And it's become known as the Dyatlov Pass incident. It's been investigated, debated, covered up, exposed, reinvestigated, and blamed on everything from an avalanche to Yeti to military tests to aliens to forest spirits to just about anything and everything in between. What is generally accepted is that the primary cause of their death was hypothermia. But why did they run out into the cold? That's the big question. A new video connects the dots from other theories and comes up with a new theory. Get this, it involves a crazed deer. You can read more about the Dyatlov Pass incident in the news section, where Sean Latisseur has posted that up at coasttocoastam.com. Say, if you like what you're hearing tonight, why not check out my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show? It airs out of Toronto, Canada, on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, 96.7 FM, every Sunday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. For more information, you can go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca. Also, check out my podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can listen and subscribe at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. More of your calls, open lines, await on Coast to Coast AM. First-time caller Paul is in Denver tonight this morning. Paul, welcome aboard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess I have a kind of ghost story to share with you. I don't know what it is. Maybe someone else does.
All right.
I was about 13 years old, and I grew up in southern Indiana. It was a hot night, moonless, and we went out to play hide-and-go-seek. Well, my brother and I went to this grove of trees and hid under one of the trees. And it was so dark that I lifted my hand up and I couldn't see it right in front of my face. So I was snickering to myself about how clever we were. And as I'm doing that, I look up and I see this man walking towards us. And he's bent over and he's saying, "Paul, Steve, come here." And he says it like three times. Well, I'm very confused. I'm thinking, who is this?
And why can you see him when you couldn't see your hand in front of your face?
And that's right when I saw, who is this? I thought, oh, my God, I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. And it scared me so bad that I scrambled out from underneath the tree and ran to our house. Well, when I got to the house, I thought, oh, my brother. And when I turned around, he was right behind me. And he said, "Did you see that guy?" And I have no idea what it was, but it scared me to death.
Here's the other frightening part is, it or he knew who you were. He called you by name.
Right.
Hmm. Wow.
So I told my mother about it. We were both in a panic. And her advice to us was, well, it's probably a spirit. Maybe it's trying to show you something.
But you weren't in whatever it was selling. You weren't buying.
No, sir.
I tell you what, Paul, your ambivalence actually makes your story more credible to me. You know, when you said, "I don't know what this is, whether it was a ghost, maybe someone else can figure it out." That to me is always a sure sign that, you know, that experience was real, whatever it was. Because I have my limited experience in the paranormal, I've had two, and I mentioned one earlier. I would have to say I have great ambivalence about both of them to this day.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know what it was, but I know I saw something that I shouldn't have been able to see. So, but that's my story, and thank you for the time.
And it's a good one, and thank you for sharing. Thank you, Paul. Let's go west of the Rockies. Josh is in Oakland, California. Josh, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm well. Yourself?
I'm good.
Terrific.
So I'm I have something to comment about. I think the universe does talk to us in different ways. You know, the phones can call us and things can appear on the computers in front of us. And one of the ways, I mean, that's happened to me a bunch of times, but one of the ways I think that might, something that might explain that partially is that part of something that I've been working on as far as one of my theories and some of the information and the research that I've been doing, but, you know, the whole plant network, we all have two things that we share in common with the plants and the animals on this planet, is that we all share the same DNA, except it's in different sequences and different locks and unlocks. And we also share DMT in our brains. And the DMT is actually one molecule off from psilocin, which is the active ingredient in mushrooms. And the mycelial network has a communication with all the plants and all the different, all the different plants have, you know, through their roots share a mycelial network, which is they're just finding out, scientists are finding out, is like a communication network between between them all. And I think what it is that one of my things that I found out in my research is that the ancient people believed that the creator, that God and goddess or whatever you believe in, that created all the life on this planet was actually a mushroom. And so one of the things that I've found in my research is I've gotten hundreds, or actually close to over 1,000 images from ancient history of different deities, different gods and goddesses, all either as a mushroom or holding a mushroom. And I think that, you know, if you consider the idea that spores can travel through space, and you have to consider where do we get all of these different varieties of life that exist on this planet. There's thousands of different insects, there's thousands of different, tens of thousands of plants and varieties, animals and stuff. And where do they all appear from or come from? So I think if you consider that, then the if the mushroom is God or the creator, then through the DMT in our brains, that's basically how it communicates with us and understands what we're thinking, what we're doing, and can feed back to us different things based on our knowledge or experiences.
Well, I'm with you. So sort of with the whole panspermia idea, I think that's possible that life was sort of transplanted here, hitchhiking on the tail end of an ice ball or a comet as it hurtled through space. But you kind of lost me with the, you know, God being a mushroom.
Basically, I think that what we have, one of the things that we have in all the cultures and all the religions, pretty much, it's pretty, we have the deities representing different elements of the natural world, when it like rain and thunder and clouds and storms. And they're mostly, there's a lot of storm deities. There's also a lot of cow goddess and bull god deities as well.
Right, right. And, there are some commonalities.
We call our galaxy the Milky Way, I think, because it traces back to the idea that there was a cow goddess in the sky or a bull god in the sky that rained down the milk, the heavenly milk, which fertilized the womb of the earth. And you have this playing out in different ways in all the different main religions. And the reason that the cow was selected, I think, is because mankind pretty much got its kick out the door to spirituality and the understanding of its connection with God through the use of the psychedelic mushroom. So when they encountered the mushroom, it was a wonder. It was a virgin birth. It's a hermaphrodite. It doesn't have to be planted and grown intentionally. And it grows in symbiotic relationship with the cow dung or the bull dung that grows in the fields. And it also grows in a symbiotic relationship with the pine and the birch trees. So we have a lot of symbolism, like with in the ancient world, like the different bird deities that are taking the pine cones from the tree of life. You see in Sumerian and Babylonian lore, you have the tree of life itself in Genesis. And one of the things, you know, the serpent, I found, is a symbol for the mushroom. So if you're looking all around for, you know, these different ideas about where they come from and where they trace back to, the mushroom actually fits in pretty much everywhere like the perfect key. So,
I got to hand it to you, Josh. You've done your research. It's some interesting mythologies there. Not sure. God, a mushroom. I don't know. Can't get my head around that one. However, it's fascinating nonetheless. It kind of reminds me of Joseph Campbell. I've been re-watching that great series with Joseph Campbell and myths on Netflix. If you get a chance, check it out. Let's say hi to, who do we have here? Is it Jesse in Vancouver on the international line? Hey, Jesse, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Hi,
welcome
Jesse.
To Coast. Hi there.
You had a guest who was discussing various vaccines. And normally I'm very respectful, to what they are saying. And I became more respectful when I realized that the efficiency of the pure vaccines without the adjuvants is very, very low, which meant all the explanations or all the theories I had been taught in school concerning how the vaccines work seemed to come a little bit short, because if those theories were right, the vaccines should be foolproof and not, say, maybe about 50% efficient, or because that's why they keep adding adjuvants. And the other surprise was that they don't understand how adjuvants work. They must have added them by chance and found that that made vaccine far more efficient. But what my main concern was, and this is where I lose some respect for the activists who have spent thousands of hours reading the literature and so on, is in two cases, smallpox and polio. And they are special kind of diseases where the virus pool was strictly human and not wild animals and so on. And that's why they succeeded in eliminating smallpox from the face of the earth. And they are about to do the same thing for polio. There are only three countries left where there is a great deal of resistance and there is some commonality: Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria. And they are heavily influenced by Islamists. Recently, there was a new prime minister in Pakistan who made it a mission to eliminate polio. He sent out health workers accompanied by police, which are essential for their safety. And something unfortunate happened. One guy, when this team came, created a fake video where he asked their school children to pretend to be unconscious after they had been vaccinated. And that videotape went viral. And these health workers, there were a number of them who were killed. Basically, they were shot dead. Because once those rumors start in the countryside, you can't have enough policemen guarding the health workers to protect them. Sometimes there's an element of surprise. Somebody will just shoot them. So the prime minister stopped that program. The same problem is in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, most of the territory is not even under government control, so they dare not send any health workers. Nigeria is heavily controlled by Islamists. Same problem. The reason I'm concerned is they have enough problem trying to eliminate polio, which can be eliminated. Pakistan and India have similar cultures. Polio has been eliminated in India. It's not there at all. Your guest, and I don't want to sort of get bogged down in it, he has some misunderstanding. He said the polio has been eliminated, but it has been replaced by some other diseases, which are not at all connected with polio. And there are all kinds of diseases in tropical countries, and we should not confuse the linkage. As a matter of fact, in India, they are constantly monitoring the sewers to look for any polio occurring in the wild. And if they find any evidence, they'll surround that area with a vaccination drive. Otherwise, vaccination is not even necessary, just the way smallpox vaccination is no longer necessary. Now, these two situations are very special simply because the vaccine is limited to human pool and not to wildlife. when the vaccine, anti-vaccine people conflate this fact with whatever opinion they may have, which may be valid in other cases, makes me think that they are going too far in reducing their credibility, because I like to respect them. But when a guest comes on the program and starts looking at smallpox and polio with the same lens, then I lose respect. There may be some other diseases also where there may be the vaccine may reside only in humans. I know of no other. Fortunately, in an unrelated matter, we seem to be very hopeful now as far as controlling malaria is concerned. They have found, they are basically by gene manipulation, they came up with a fungus which they combined with an Australian spider of some sort, and that attacks only the mosquitoes which carry malaria.
Well, if that is true and that comes to fruition, that is good news indeed, because malaria is just an absolute scourge. A couple of things. You were referring to Forrest Moretti, who was a guest on the program a couple months ago, I guess. And first of all, I don't think he would characterize himself as an anti-vaxxer. He was simply attempting to write a history of the development of certain types of vaccines. I don't recall specifically what he said about smallpox or polio, and I'm not sure if it would happened during our conversation on Coast or another conversation I had with him, but he said if you look at sort of the progression of those diseases, both of those were on the decline prior to the development of vaccines, and he attributed that to improvements in sanitation and health and nutrition and so forth. I don't know if that's the case. I don't claim to be an expert, but I just wanted to clarify what my recollection of that conversation was about. However, Jesse, thank you for your thoughts on that. Perhaps at some point we'll have Forrest Moretti back on. Let's see. Well, I think we will, we're just going to hold it right there, and we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will continue with Open Lines. Taking us into the break, here's the great Roy Orbison, truly one of the great voices of the 20th century. Here's Mystery Girl on Coast to Coast AM.